ॐ भरताय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कृतिताम् पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीम् भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्. Tatratam buddhisam yogam, tatratam buddhisam yogam, labhate paurvadehikam, labhate paurvadehikam, yatate chatato bhuyaha, yatate chatato bhuyaha, samsiddhau kurunandana, samsiddhau kurunandana. Tatratam buddhi samyogam labhate paurva dehikam yatate cha tataha bhuyaha samsiddhau kurunandana. Remember in the previous two verses Krishna was explaining to Arjuna what happens, where you go if you're a yoga brashta, somebody who failed at sannyasa, went through your life, you took sannyasa, but you weren't able to gain the pala, the fruit of that sannyasa, to be able to say, I've done all that needs to be done, I'm free, I have moksha. You haven't recognized that, and so you feel all the sannyasa did not give you what you had thought it would give. That's a yoga brashtaha. Yoga brashtaha means ubaya brashtaha. You've fallen from yoga, you didn't attain that through the sannyasa. You also gave up all of the rituals, all of the karma, all of the karmas to be done. You gave up the samsara underneath the joys that you might have there. You gave the rituals to get some heavenly world. So what happens to such a person? And so Krishna said, you know, such a person whose life is devoted to gaining knowledge, that person never comes to a bad end. They would never come to a bad end. And he says, if the person, that person could be born into a family of people who are dharmic and are well off and pick up the thread there with that family, or they could be born into a family of yogis, right, and pick up the thread from a young age. So either one of these, they'll take a birth in a family like that. And then he says there, in that family that they've been born into, either the family of yogis, yogis means karma yogis, of people who have this knowledge, or who are living in the world because they're family and they're having children. So there, in that birth, tam buddhisam yogam labhate paurvadehikam, says they gain, that person will become connected with the buddhi, with that knowledge which they had in their previous life. Paurvadehikam means in the previous embodiment, literally previous embodiment. So where they left off, the knowledge that they had in that previous life, they gained that again. He says, yetatecha, and then they yetate, they strive for tataha buyaha, they strive for samsiddhau, they strive for gaining moksha. Samsiddhi is moksha. Then they make their efforts for moksha, starting from where they left off. Tataha buyaha. Buyaha means from where they left off, again they proceed. So it's, you see what I'm saying? They connect, the karma will connect them, you know, with a family that will protect them. And then a family that's conducive. And then in that life, they'll be connected with the knowledge, the same knowledge that they had left behind in the previous life. And then from that vantage, then from that place, they will make efforts again in order to gain moksha, starting from where they left off. He says, tataha buyaha, they'll make a greater effort, even greater effort to gain that knowledge. Okay? So then there's a little more he says. He says, Purvabhyasena tenaiva. Purvabhyasena tevaina. Priyate hyavashopisaha. Priyate hyavashopisaha. Jignyasu rapi yogasya. Jignyasu rapi yogasya. Shabda brahmati varatate. Shabda brahmati varatate. Purva abhyasena tena eva hriyate. I avashaha api saha. Jignyasahu api yogasya. Shabda brahma ati varatate. Now he says, to have a fear, like, what if, because free will is there, what if I take that birth, I get in a good birth, but then, you know, I get led astray through just a dharma and whatnot, I get led astray by my friends or whatnot, what could that happen to me? And so what he says is, by your previous abhyasa, by that previous abhyasa, abhyasa means practice. In other words, if you had lived a life that was dedicated to gaining this knowledge as a previous practice. Remember the abhyasa in Vairagya? So your previous exposure to knowledge, your previous commitment in your previous life, by that previous commitment, he says, Riyate avashaha api saha. That person will helplessly be captured or be captured by that previous abhyasa. Captured means you'll be that calling will be stronger. The calling, by your previous karmas, those previous karmas will protect you and will drag you even helplessly, you know. And so then in the bhasha, in Swamiji's bhasha, the pravritti is there. In other words, it would be hard for, the world is not going to be strong enough to change your course. So by the abhyasa and by the commitment of the prior life, of your prior life, that will be stronger than the temptations of this life. That's the idea. And then he says, that person is somebody who's a jignyasuhu, who has a desire to know this. Right? Because even in the previous life, that jignyasa was there. Jignyasa means the desire to know. Once jignyasa is there, a desire to know, a desire for liberation is there, that desire for liberation itself comes from viveka, right? A discrimination and a certain level of vairagya. So once that desire, that jignyasa is there, then again the jignyasa will be there for this yoga. For this yoga means moksha. Yoga here means actually it means the dukkha in the bhasha, dukkha viyoga. Yoga is really dukkha viyoga. It means a separation from sorrow. And then in the previous verses, as Krishna was unfolding this, it means that seeing the sameness in all beings, seeing that which is sama, seeing Brahman in all beings. Right? And what I experience, my experience in this world, I see what is the same. It's a beautiful way of seeing it. I see what is the same. The only thing that is the same is the sat-chit. And there's nothing in the creation that doesn't equally enjoy that sat-chit fully. It doesn't matter what it is. Really, it's, you know, it's if it's whether it's a worm or a Hitler or a saint or a stone or the sun or anything in the creation, if that samatvam is there, that samatvam is Brahman. It's the sat-chit. That is the very being of the entire creation. And so the jnani is the one who, there's nothing in the creation that can in any way cover the sat-chit. It can cover Brahman. So what that means is, in fact, there's nothing, because once the sat-chit is recognized, what's going to cause the as-though covering of that is lack of vairagya. Really. It's being sucked into the samsara. Right? And then I'm identified myself, the sat-chit becomes my body, mind, sense organs. There's no recognition of the sat-chit, my being as being the self of all beings, because I've totally identified with my body, mind, sense organs, and then I am sat-chit, and you are something else. Right? I am this body, sat-chit in the form of this body. satya in the form of my mind, but I don't recognize, you know, the satya mitya. The satya mitya is the recognition of the satchit. I am the satchit, but the satchit is free of me. Right? My mind is satchit, but I am free of the mind. My body is satchit, but I am free of the body. You know, you are satchit, but you are also free. Right? So it's the recognition of the freedom of that samatva buddhi. That samatva buddhi is moksha, really. And that samatva buddhi is the recognition of myself as my nature as being dukkha viyoga, free of sorrow. My nature is free of sorrow. There's an incredible amount of suffering and pain and sorrow in the world. There's a lot of joy also. There's everything. Everything imaginable is in the world. But there's so much suffering and so much sorrow. There's so much death. There's so much tragedy. There's all kinds of everything imaginable is in the world. To the degree you're identified with that as being yourself, you're suffering. Right? To the degree that you're identified with the mind as being yourself, whatever the emotion, whatever the feeling, whatever is going on in the mind, that is you. Because that adhyasa, that superimposition is there. It's not you, but then the ahankara takes it to be you. And so then you're living off of that platform. Right? You're living off of that notion. And so then you feel, you know, I am suffering, I am sorrowful, you know, I am happy, or I am hateful, or I am angry, or I am bitter, or I am pleased, or I am compassionate, or I am saintly. It's just, whatever happens to be the vritti, I take that self, I take that experience to be me. You know, and then I would say, I am suffering, I am sorrowful. But what if when I recognize myself, the satchit, when the ahankara is identified with the satchit, with my being, I can't say that about myself, no matter what the condition of the world is. And I think that's when we say this dukkha samyoga, that's the thing that really has to be understood, is that the self that I am is free of suffering. It's free of suffering even when suffering is there. That's honestly what has to be understood. Yourself is free of suffering experientially. I don't mean just theoretically. Experientially, the nature of your being is free of suffering in the midst of suffering. Now, the thing is that we work for antakarana shuddhi. We work for purity of mind so that emotional problems, psychological problems, ways of behaving in the world that cause pain, we work on ourselves in order to neutralize those things because they're painful. Just like you work on yourself to eliminate physical pain because physical pain is painful. And so some people are more sophisticated at taking care of their physical body, having the proper diet, eating properly, being at the proper weight, doing the proper amount of exercise, getting the proper amount of sleep. All of these things are done in order to keep this upadhi as pain-free as possible. Right? And so we all put different amounts of effort into that because we know that the physical body is something that can suffer tremendous pain. You know, we can suffer. It's capable of suffering tremendous pain. In fact, one yoga teacher we had at school, we'd taken out to dinner one time. She said something I've never forgotten. I've probably said it several times in this class. In fact, she said to us, the group of us who were eating with her, she said, "You know, you can spend a half an hour a day, you know, doing some yoga, taking care of yourself, half an hour a day now, or you can do it full time later." I thought, that's right. That's right. But you know, we're maintaining something that is subject to suffering. That's the thing. Atma is not subject to suffering. The body is subject to suffering and it needs to be cared for, it needs to be maintained, it needs to be handled. The mind is subject to suffering, depending upon how it responds in the world, how its attitudes, the different ways we approach life, all of the different attitudes that we have, all the way we handle our complexes and hurts. The mind is capable of tremendous suffering. You know, and so because of that, we have to, that kaushalam, we have to know how to handle it. And the thing is, in the light of self-knowledge, where you have recognized the source of ananda, the source of the ananda that you seek, the source of the wholeness, the source of the love that you seek, is the very nature of Brahman, is the very nature of your being. Once the mind understands this, then it learns also, in light of this knowledge, how to handle itself in this samsara. Because for the ajnani, the mind in a sense doesn't have a chance. Very difficult for the mind to have any type of lasting peace or lasting happiness, because of the adhyasa, because of the ignorance that causes the superimposition, where I take my well-being, my wholeness, my fullness, my sense of, my, not sense of self-worth, my experience of myself of as being whole and complete and having self-worth, you know, where I experience myself as having self-worth, having self-esteem. All of these are just words: self-worth, self-esteem, self-love, well-being, a sense of wealth. They're just all words that are pointing to a simple abiding sense that all is well with me. These are all just words that are different ways of pointing to that. But if the shanti in my mind is dependent upon the world giving me happiness, giving me, fulfilling my desires, behaving in a certain way toward me so that my mind can relax, then I'm always going to be subject to a lot of pain, you know, a lot of pain. And the mind is capable of it. And we all know it. The mind's capable of giving us tremendous pain. And so with knowledge, the mind, the knowledge and the teaching of all of these type of qualities, you know, all of the values, you know, all the values that we teach are all in light of this knowledge. Because your nature is full, is complete, is ananda, the mind does not need to project it out. And it learns how to sit at home, enjoying the ananda, and then experiencing the world as Ishvara. So there's a lot of teaching, there's a lot of understanding that the mind has to grow into, understanding how to be, you know, what are the repercussions for the mind in light of this knowledge, in the light of this self-recognition. You know, so this vairagya, all of this understanding of vairagya, this dispassion, all of this understanding, all of the values, understanding dharma, all of these things become so meaningful. Because it's helping me to unwind the mind's way of being in the world with ignorance, which has been habitual. So I'm in the world with ignorance, thinking that somehow the world needs to be in a particular way to make me happy. And then I have so many terrible emotions around its failure to do that. Emotions of rage and anger and bitterness and hurt and disappointment. There's so many feelings like this. The whole negative spectrum. The positive spectrum too. We take that, that's fine, we don't care about that. When the positive spectrum is there, we're happy. It's a negative spectrum, you know, that causes so much pain and grief. So that negative spectrum has to, the causes for it, which have to do with my understanding and my attitude, dissolve in the light of my knowledge over time, right? And so that gives, that antakarana shuddhi, that Antakarana Shuddhi is something that takes place in time as I assimilate, right, the effects of my knowledge on my life. So it's not instantaneous, right? Because we have so many habitual ways of being. And so many layers and layers and lifetimes. This lifetime's enough for our childhood and the way we grew up. There's so many things that have hurt us in one way or another. So that all, we all have to come to grips with all of that. You know, all has to be assimilated in the light of one's knowledge. And so that process of assimilation also is something that takes place over time, you know. And as one assimilates and that one gains that vairagya, and one has, to the degree that one has become a mumukshu, right, that means you've assimilated, just to become a mumukshu, you've assimilated a lot of your experience. It's a huge thing. In fact, it's considered tremendous punya. Lifetimes, and say that what they say and what the Shastra is saying here, lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, as we'll see in the next verses, to even come to that place where you ask the question, who am I, and is really there any way that I can be freed from this suffering? Is it possible? Is there any way? Is there such a thing as moksha? What is that? Because I don't see that there's any way to solve this problem in the world just by the nature of the world. That understanding, that's a huge understanding. It's considered huge punya that has taken lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes to get to that point. And then once you're at that point of understanding, it's at that time you become somebody who is really ready. You're not ayati anymore. You're somebody who's really ready for this knowledge. You know, you may have tried and tried and tried for to live a dharmic life and to live a meditative life, a prayerful life. But at some point, everything, because of that punya from doing that, all of these things come together and make you into a mumukshu. And at that time, then you become one who's ready for this knowledge. Then you gain this knowledge. And still, there's a lot of growth that has to, this knowledge, like the bonfire that we talked about last week, this knowledge has to then rout out all of the pain-producing vrittis, right? The way we think, the way we are with the world, that is ajnanam, that is ignorance-based, that causes so much pain and suffering. This knowledge has to slowly burn through all of that, which it does, which you appreciate it doing. It burns through all of that. And now, the question is, God, I've done all this work. Now, you know, worked on myself and, you know, got rid of these complexes and this complex and tests, you know. And then I die. I hadn't completed the job. You know. Will I pick up where I left off? It's a valid question, right? Well, all of this work, well, you know, but still, I don't have nishta. I still have lots of problems. I don't feel free. I don't feel like I've really owned my knowledge, you know. I don't have that clarity. What will happen to me when I die? Will I pick up where I left off? And so Krishna understands this. It's a natural question. Yes, you will. You'll be born into a good family and you will pick up where you left off in terms of your level of understanding, your level of maturity. You'll be reunited with your knowledge. And that, the samskaras, as Shankara talks about in the Bhashas, the samskaras that you had gathered in the previous life, those samskaras will be stronger than any adharmas that might be there. The samskaras are samskara is the way you approach things, your tendencies, you know, that you bring over from the past life, from your past life. So those understandings, those ways of being will carry over from the past life. So you bring those samskaras with you. And you will, he says, you will be a jignyasu. You'll be one again who desires to have this knowledge, a jignyasu for yoga. That yoga is that seeing the samatvam, that moksha. The yogi here is that jnana, seeing the sameness in all beings, being free, that freedom, that dukkha viyoga samyoga, that yoga which is the freedom from dukkha. You know, that you will have a desire for that again, just as before, and you will be somebody who crosses over to the other side of the Vedas. By that they mean the Brahma Shabda. Brahma Shabda means the first part of the Vedas. You won't find yourself fitting into the first part of the Vedas. You'll fit into the second part of the Vedas, the Upanishads. Means as a jignasu, once you're a jignasu, you're not going to go back to being a karmi. Because that, not that there's anything wrong with the karmas, but for doing the karmas, following dharma, all of these things are wonderful for antakarana shuddhi. But once you want moksha, you know, then you need to be united with this knowledge. And so he says, you will be. You don't have to worry about being swept away from your knowledge. So then he says, Priyatna yatamanas tu yogi samshuddha kalbishaha yogi samshuddha kalbishaha aneka janma samsiddha tato yati param gatim priyatnat yatamanah tu yogi samshuddha kilbishah aneka janma samsiddha tataha yati param gatim. He says, Priyatnat means from one's own commitment, one's own will. Yatamanaha, the one who's making the yogi who has been making effort from one's own will to follow dharma, to live a meditative life, to do karma yoga, to do all that's necessary for antakarana shuddhi. That person who from their own efforts, samshuddha kilbishaha, has ended up with a pure mind. A mind who's for the one for whom the impurities of the mind have been removed. Right? Antakarana shuddhi. Getting antakarana shuddhi is a job. You know? It requires that karma yoga buddhi, it requires dharma, it requires vigilance, it requires working on yourself, working on your complexes, handling all of these things, being in difficult situations where your raga dvesha are excited, you know, and then being able to be dharmic and dispassionate and appropriate in those situations. We're tested all the time. I mean, the world is a cauldron for antakarana shuddhi. It's always hammering at you. Wherever there's a little weak spot, Bhagavan is an expert. There's the little weak spot there. Let's create the perfect situation to polish that little spot. You know? Great. Incredible.
Let's get her a cat.
She needed to be a mom so badly. Give that woman a cat or she dies. So whatever it is, whatever growth area is necessary, and there are many for us, you know, because we have, you know, lifetimes of jnana. So whatever growth area is there, the creation will create situations that are very, very challenging for you. And, of course, it won't let you get out of the situation until you grow out of it. That's how you get out of these situations that are very painful. You grow out of them. You can't escape them. If you try, we probably all noticed, you know, there's some situation, some type of person or whatnot, very painful for you to have to deal with them. You think you can escape, you know, run away from them so you never have to see them again. You know? But right around the corner, now, is another one just like them. You can't escape. Bhagavan's made it that way. You can't escape yourself. You know, it's just, you know, it's the same example. If you're looking for a car and you decide you want a Volvo, all you'll see are Volvos. You decide, because now your commitment is toward, you want a car and you decided you want a Volvo, Probably never saw Volvos or noticed them on the road before. Now you see them everywhere. Okay? Because, right, you have an intention there. Now, say there's something in the world or some type of person or some type of situation that agitates you. That means you have some radar there. So, wherever that is, you're pricked. Yeah, and it's just, it's like everything is everywhere. But you only comes to you what you're looking for. You know what I mean? It's like where your weak spots are, then there's always like it's a lock and key. And in every situation, there is a key for your weak spot. But if the weak spot's not there, then even though the keys are there, there's no lock, there's no, you know, keyhole. And so nothing happens to you. But somebody else who has a keyhole for that particular thing is going to get really pricked. That's how it goes on and on like that. And so Antakarna Shuddhi requires commitment. You know, even when, as you gain knowledge, there's a commitment there to own your knowledge in light of the situations that cause us pain. And that requires strength. It requires commitment. It requires some will on your part. Right? So this is what he means here. He says, those for whom all of these impurities, means these pain-producing ways of being or ways of thinking about others and thinking about myself and thinking about the world, as those have been purified by that yogi who has made effort out of their own will, out of their own resolve, he says, these aneka janma samsiddha, those people who have gained this samsiddhi over many janmas. Aneka janma means over many births. In other words, remember in what I was just talking about earlier, in the Viveka Chudamani, those verses, person who comes to this knowledge, you know, is of crores and crores, lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes of punya, of dharma, of working on, you know, themselves to gain some level of antakarana shuddhi so that they would even have the question. And so here, what they mean here by this aneka janma samsiddhi is you have to look at yourself, who you are right now as aneka janma samsiddhi. To even come this far, to have this question, to have that intent, to gain knowledge, to gain nishtha in this knowledge, to have that resolve. You're an aneka janma samsiddhi. For many lifetimes, much punya, lifetimes and lifetimes of dharma have brought you to this place where what is of value to you is moksha and dharma. That's, we don't live up to everything. You know, we're not perfect people, perfect little dharmanishtas running around. But the value is there. The value is at the highest value. You know, and so your life, your whole life is an expression of that highest value. You're doing the best you can. That's a huge thing. That's the aneka janma samsiddha. And so for such a person, you know, who has spent lifetimes, because remember, Arjuna was so worried, what's going to happen to that, you know, sannyasi who was an ayati? He did probably have shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That sannyasi who's going to be an ubhayabhrashta. He took sannyasa because, remember, this is what Arjuna wanted to do. Let me take sannyasa, go to the forest, and I'll gain moksha. Why did he think I'll gain moksha? Because I took sannyasa and I went to the forest. That should be it. That should give me moksha. That's the ayati, right? That's not going to give you moksha. What gives you moksha is jnana, is knowledge. Not taking sannyasa and going to the forest. You can take sannyasa, go to the forest and gain knowledge. But sannyasa itself won't give you knowledge. And so there are a lot of people who have taken sannyasa and they do all types of tapas, all types of things for antakarna shuddhi. But they don't do what that's necessary for jnana. That's the ayati. This is what would happen to somebody who did that. And then Krishna says, don't worry. You know, that person who's devoted like that, that person will, their life will never come to naught. You know, that person will be have a good birth and will pick up where they left off. And born, we'd be born in a good family after after spending eons in the Swargaloka. So don't worry, they're very protected. So Arjuna, don't you worry, you'll be very, very protected, no problem. But now Krishna is starting to say here, that person now, who's a yogi, who is freed from all of these kilbishas, all of these impurities, then that person, yati param gati, then, having gained that antakarana shuddhi, that person goes to the highest gati. The highest gati, he attains the highest gati. The highest gati is that samatvam, or I see that identity with Ishvara, that I am Ishvara, as he's going to say now. So he says, tapasvid pyo diko yogi, jnani pyo pi mato dikaha, jnani pyo pi mato dikaha, karmibhyas chadiko yogi, tasmat yogi bhavarjuna, says, tapasvibhyaha adikaha yogi, jnanibhyaha api mataha adikaha, karmibhyaha cha adikaha yogi, tasmat yogi bhava arjuna. He says, that yogi, the yogi who is the jnani, the one who has this vision, this freedom from sorrow, who sees the self in all beings, he sees the samatva in all beings, that yogi is adikaha, he is superior to, better than, superior to, the tapasvi. Superior to means the state of being, that recognition that person has. It's the moksha. It's the I see myself as the same in all beings and free from sorrow. That's much more than the tapasvi has, the one who does all types of ascetic practices. And that, there's nothing wrong with that either. That gives a certain discipline and it gives an antakarana shuddhi. But liberation is more than that. Liberation is the recognition of a self that is beyond discipline. It's the self that illumines the discipline and the lack of it. The self that can't be disciplined or undisciplined. The self that is free of discipline and undiscipline. That self, you know, abiding as that self, is far greater than that which the tapasvi has. It's far greater, in my opinion, he says, mataha, far greater, even from the jnani. Here the jnani means the one who has knowledge of the Vedas, of the Vedanta, but knowledge, not a paroksha jnanam, has paroksha jnanam, can be a great scholar, know all of the Upanishads, know all of the bhashas, just like the pundits do, and you can know all of the first part of the Vedas also. You can be a great scholar, you know, and have all of that knowledge. But, you know, you're not a yogi. Means you haven't recognized the truth of that knowledge. So if you say the yogi is greater than the jnani, means the yogi is the one who has the aparoksha jnanam, who has that freedom from sorrow, really. There's the freedom from sorrow, and who sees the samatva in all beings, so even from the jnani. And karmibhyaha cha adikaha yogi. And that yogi, that one who recognizes this, that person is greater than the karmi also. The one who does all of the rituals and practices all of the dharma. Because all of this is as good as it is. What he's talking about here are things that are good. You know, things that are positive, things that bring about antakarana shuddhi. But all of these things have to resolve somewhere. That point of resolution is in the Atma, which is free of all of that. Right? That's what the Atma is. Why all of these things are done? So this is what all of these people want. Is an ananda, is a fullness that is free of it. Yeah? And the yogi is the one who has that. What the karmi seeks, what the jnani seeks, what the tapasvi seeks, you know? Why do you do all of these disciplines? What are you seeking, you know? Why are you gaining all of this knowledge? What are you seeking? Why are you doing all of these rituals? What are you seeking? It's that which is being sought, which is the self that the yogi has recognized. And so the yogi, therefore, is the one who is superior to all of that, because that's what everybody's struggling and striving for. So then he says, tasmat, therefore, yogi bhava, Arjuna. Therefore, Arjuna, become a yogi. Be a yogi. Be one who owns this knowledge. If you want to take sannyasa, really, you know, do the karma yoga. Let the karma yoga itself resolve into sannyasa, but know whether karma yoga or sannyasa is a lifestyle. To be a sannyasi is sarva karma sannyasa. To be a sannyasi is sarva karma sannyasa. Sarva karma sannyasa means the one who is freed from all karma. The only one that's free of all karma is Brahman. There's no body, there's no mind, there's no sense organs, there's no jiva upadi that can ever at any time be free of all karma. Right? As long as you have an upadi, you have to be engaged in the world. You have to eat, you have to drink, you have to take care of yourself, you have to be engaged in whatever your prarabdha is. That's because the upadi is part and parcel of the world. For that, there's no sarva karma sannyasa. The sarva karma sannyasa is yourself. And the only means to gain that is knowledge, because you already are that. So be a yogi, Arjuna. You know, be a yogi, own up this. Be a dukkha viyoga yoga. Let your yoga be dukkha viyoga, that total freedom from sorrow. See that samatvam. See that samatvam, that sameness in all beings. Seeing the sameness in all beings, you have to really understand how profound it is, the sameness in all beings, is to recognize, you have to include this body, mind, sense organs in all the beings. Then the recognition of the sameness in all beings is that I am all beings. I am the self of all beings. This self that I am is the self of all beings. That's the truth of it. And so now he goes on. This next verse is a continuation. He says, Yoginam api sarvesham, Yoginam api sarvesham, Madgatenantaratmana, Shraddhavan pajate yomam. Shraddhavan pachate yomam samayuktatamo mataha yoginam abhisarvesham madgatena antara atmana shraddhavan bhajate yaha mam saha me yuktatamaha mataha. He says, yoginam abhisarvesham, of all of the yogis, madgatena antaratmana, with a mind, antaratmana is a mind, like antakarana, with a mind which is madgatena, which is focused on me, which is resting in me. Mat means me. So here's Krishna saying to Arjuna, of all the yogis, and he says, with a mind that is resting on me, shraddhavan bhajate yaha, the one who, he says, the one who has Shraddha, means, you know, Shraddha means that one who has that Shraddha in the Vedas, the Shraddha in me. There's something, to have Shraddha means, it's called Ishwara Nugraha. It's the grace of God, really, that something in you recognizes that this is the truth. I want to know this. I want to have this knowledge. And I want to learn this from my teacher. You have a Shraddha in your teacher, and you have Shraddha in that knowledge. With that Shraddha, then in the method of teaching, the teaching methodology, which here is the Upanishad, you have Shraddha in that, you have Shraddha in the teacher, then your mind is available. That's why Shraddha van labhate jnanam, another Gita verse, the one who has Shraddha gains this knowledge. Without Shraddha, the mind's unavailable. If knowledge can be there, but then the knowledge can be there, teaching can be there, everything can be there, but the mind's not available. You don't like the teacher, you don't have Shraddha in the teaching, it can all be going on, it's just a bunch of blab. You know, no entry, you know, because the mind isn't available. So here he says it. The one who has Shraddha, he says, the one who has Shraddha, he, bhajate mam, he gains me. He commits him, he gains me. Right? Let me see what she says. Bhajate sevate means, sevate means to serve. It's not exact bhajate. He is committed to me means the mind is, that's where the mind is focused. Right? So he worships me, he is committed to me, he gains me. He gains me with a mind that is totally absorbed or focused on me. Madgatena means that it's gone to me. Mud means me. With a mind that has gone to me. Mind that has gone to me means you see the samatvam in everything. You see Brahman in everything. That samatvam, that Brahman is me. Right, so Krishna, this is Mahavakya now. Krishna is the one saying, the one who sees in everything sees me. Right? So that one, he says, that one who has Shraddha in me, like that, that one who has Shraddha, he gains me by means of a mind that is resolved in me. Right? And then he says, that person, me mata, in my opinion, of course, Bhagavan talking, so his opinion does mean something. So he says, me mata, in my opinion, is that person is yukta tamaha. That person is the most exalted. Right? That person is the most exalted yogi. So of all of these people, the one who has Shraddha, that one who has Shraddha, you know, who gains me, having a mind that has me for its focus. That is what Bhagavan is. Ishwara is the focus. And there's kind of a bhakti there also. But that bhakti is a bhakti of knowledge. You know, the greatest, in fact, Krishna will say, the greatest bhakti, bhakta, devotee, in fact, is the jnani. Because otherwise you're having devotion, but you don't know who you're devoted to. You know, so that in fact the greatest, there's many different types of bhaktas, and they all love me and they're all dear to me. But the greatest bhakta is the jnani, because the jnani is the one who knows me. So knowing me and that one who knows me, their mind is centered on me. So the one who sees me everywhere is the self in all beings, that samatva. That one is free from sorrow, and to me, he says, in my opinion, that one is yukta tamaha. That person is the most exalted. So that's how he ends this verse, this chapter.
How does that quote? I don't have the book. That quote goes, "The one who sees me everywhere and everything you need," or something.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
A lot like that. Right? Yeah. Iti Srimad Paramahamsa. Is this what you have?
No.
There's a lot of different ones. Let me do this one. Om, Om Tatsata. Om Tatsata. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su. Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Shri Krishna Arjuna Sambade Jnana Yoga Nama Jnana Yoga Nama Shashtodhyayaha Shashtodhyayaha. This chapter 6, Shashtaha Adhyayaha, the 6th chapter, Nama named Dhyana Yoga, the chapter that, here yoga just means the chapter, the section, that deals with Dhyana, with meditation. In this Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, in this teaching between, in this discussion between Krishna and Arjuna, but Samvade means the teaching where there's a teacher-student relationship, So in this discussion between Krishna and Arjuna, with Krishna being the teacher, in this yoga shastra, this shastra which teaches karma yoga, and brahma vidyayam, it teaches brahma vidya, the Gita teaches both brahma vidya and yoga, and karma yoga. So he says, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, so this Bhagavad Gita, Upanishadsu, which is viewed as an Upanishad, because what we call the Prasthana Traya, the three texts, right, that make up the Vedanta, are the Upanishads, the scriptures, the Upanishads, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutras. The Bhagavad Gita, because it's taught by Krishna, by the Lord, it's in the middle of the Mahabharata, it's been taught by Krishna, it has the same anubandha chatushtaya that we were talking about in the Vedanta Sara. It has the same vision, right? This vision is not different from the vision of the Upanishads, and so it's honored sometimes. The Bhagavad Gita is honored sometimes as an Upanishad. So we would say, Om Tat Sat, Om, this is the truth. Okay. Thus, in this Bhagavad Gita, which is honored like an Upanishad, in this Bhagavad Gita, which teaches Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra, which is a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, right? This is the sixth chapter called Jnana Yoga, the chapter on meditation. So this sixth chapter, finishing the sixth chapter, completes a third of the Bhagavad Gita, the chapter that deals with the Tvampara. Tvampara means with you, approaching this vision from the standpoint of the jiva. The second six chapters approach this vision from the standpoint of Ishwara. The unfoldment is from Ishwara. The last six chapters are from Tattvamasi, the Aikya, the identity. Right? And so, Swamiji has a handout, which our machine broke down at school, so I didn't get the handout. But he does a synopsis of these first six chapters that I'll give you next week. So all you have now is the first 10 verses of chapter 7. But next week, the machine will be working again. I'll get those. That handout for the rest of for his analysis of these first six chapters. Very nice.
Should we be happy that we're at the end, or sad?
The Gita. You teach the Gita, and then you just start again from the beginning.
Yeah. So there's no end.
Yeah, there's no end to it. You just start again.
Good.
Swamiji used to chant it backwards and forwards every day, the whole Gita. Can you imagine that? Going from verse 1 all the way to verse 5, and then coming all the way back. All 18 chapters. In this direction, then that direction, then this direction, and that direction. It's a really wonderful thing. So. Okay, let's see up here. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.